There's a whole world of monsters out there waiting to be discovered. Legends and lore that have been kept deep in the recesses of society. It's time that they've been given their just due and are brought out for all to know. I'm Michael Patrick, and this is the Monsters and Friends Podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever time it is, wherever you are, when you are listening, thank you so much for tuning into this week's adventures. You are, of course, listening to the Monsters and Friends podcast, and I could not be happier to have you back in the old Winnie. I know I've been silent for quite a while now. I did post an update a little bit ago about what's been going on in Monsterville, but have no fear, friends, I am back. The biggest question that I have gotten, though, outside of where the heck are you, is where the heck is Barry? And you know what? I literally have no idea. I haven't heard from Barry since about Christmas time when he decided he wanted to go over to Tibet and find his cousin. I will tell you, though, that I have his phone number. So, you know what? Let's give him a call and see what happens. Maybe we'll see what he's been up to these, you know, last 9 months or so. So, hold on just one second here. Let me get my phone and... Okay. Hey Barry, it's MP. I just wanted to see how you were doing since it's been a while. You got my digit, so give me a call. We all miss you. All right, later. Hang that up. Well, I guess we'll see if he calls me back. But anyway, on to this week's episode. There are a lot of things, you know, that make the United States quite unique, and the fact that we have so many people here from so many different places and so many different backgrounds really helps to add and to grow all of the different stories and legends that we get to hear and experience in this awesome place. It makes each place that we visit on our road trip amazing, and this next state, it's no exception. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Louisiana. There is such an abundance of everything in Louisiana that it makes it a great home to a lot of cryptids, legends, and lore. Louisiana has a subtropical climate, meaning that it has some hot, hot, hot summers and some very mild winters. That's great in the way of cryptids because it gives them an opportunity to thrive. While there are occasions where it can get cold, frozen days and nights are few and far between. Because of the climate, there's also always been an abundance of food. Granted, if the food choice is people, then the temperature really doesn't matter then, does it? There are so many different types of creatures that call Louisiana home. Think of it this way, it's kind of like nature's golden corral, and it's just always open. Not only that though, the climate is also pretty great for our monster friends. Louisiana has been inhabited by people in the area of something around like 10,000 years. Over that amount of time, there's bound to be a few things that have happened there. Lots of ghosts, lots of stories, and lots of legends. Put those three things together and you've got a recipe for one of the most lore-filled and monster-filled states in America. That's where we come in. This week, I'm going to bring you two and a half stories about some creatures that are said to call Louisiana home. The last few episodes, we've been very heavy on the legendary stories, but this week, we dive back into the cryptid world. So in the sixth grade, I remember my English teacher rather vividly. I couldn't tell you his name, but I do remember that he looked quite a lot like Ichabod Crane. The only real difference was that he had the worst haircut ever, but that's not part of the story. Anyway, I remember that he was a new teacher, and the reason that I remember this was because he continually reminded us. Every single class. I remember him teaching us about hominins, homophones, and homographs. Now, the reason that this lesson sticks out so much to me is that I vividly remember getting into a rather spirited discussion due to the fact that I was busy daydreaming about Janine Fisher and not listening to anything he was saying. He asked me to spell something, and I did. I was a really good speller. Ichabod said it was wrong. It was like a pear or something. I argued that I spelled it right, and he said that it was right, but it was wrong. That made absolutely no sense to me, and I let old Mr. Crane know about it. That was the one time that I had detention in my life. Looking back, you know, I think he was referencing the fruit, while I was referencing when you had two of something. Well, either way, look where we are now, Ichabod. No matter what, though, the point of the story still stands. And that point is sometimes you can have two meanings to one name. Granted, the school analogy doesn't really completely pay off because the two for one has the same spelling, but nonetheless, the point still stands. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce to you our first friend of the evening, or rather friends. I present to you the Grunch. The Grunch is a very intriguing creature. Well, creatures really. Wait, Mike, what? I don't get it. Well, let me tell you then. There are two stories that surround the Grunch. The first one ties nicely into the second one, but it goes a little something like this. Allow me to history nerd for just a moment here, alright? New Orleans is quite literally a town like no other in the US. It's a town that is so steeped in tradition and culture that you can't take a step without experiencing the history of it. Whether it's the cobblestone roads, the centuries-old cemeteries, or just the really creepy buildings, you experience all of New Orleans history when you're there. New Orleans was first claimed way back in 1682, and it's been a hotbed of people ever since. Millions have walked its streets and visited the swamps and waterways around the city. New Orleans was a port town. Lots of folks came in and out, and some of them ended up settling down. There are some intriguing folks that have called New Orleans home throughout the decades. Reese Witherspoon, Emeril Lagasse, if you don't know who that is, I'm sorry for you, Louis Armstrong, Harry Connick Jr., and of course, Lil Wayne. What an amazing list, right? However, not everyone that settled down in New Orleans was an amazing star. Throughout the earlier parts of New Orleans days and into the 19th and 20th centuries, a sordid lot of seedy folks would pop through the Big Easy. Pirates, ladies of the night, and career criminals started to see New Orleans as a venerable vacation destination. But it wasn't just the bad that ended up calling it home. Social outcasts and deviants also found their ways down to New Orleans. Some of these folks found that they weren't even accepted in New Orleans, though, and they ended up living on the outskirts of town throughout the bayous and cypress forests. That's where we first meet up with the legend of the Grunch, or namely more about the inhabitants of Grunch Road. As I said, some folks just didn't feel that they belonged in New Orleans, so they created their own little pop-up towns in the bayou around the city. The majority of these folks would be what people of the time would be considered freaks. We're talking about little people, albinos, disfigured people, etc. They felt uncomfortable in town, so they made their own community. Of course, over time they realized that all they had was each other, and inevitably they ended up breeding with each other, shallowing the gene pool a bit. Through time, they'd end up inbreeding with each other so much, according to legend, they would create creatures that terrified anyone that happened to wander through. One gentleman shared a story of how he was wandering through the bayou and came across a village of tents and pop-up shacks. The inhabitants of this village terrified this man. He recounted seeing people with bulbous, veiny heads that were white as snow and people with hunchbacks. He made a noise and they heard him and gave chase. He hid amongst the cypress trees as they ended up returning to their village, and when he went back to New Orleans, he never returned to the bayou again after that. He described them as being creatures of the devil sent to the woods to pay for the sins of humanity. This is a fairly anecdotal account as well, but there are a few dozen stories of teenagers heading out into the bayou to find these folks and throw rocks at them, or just didn't believe the story and they wanted to head out to Grunch Road for the occasional makeout sesh. There's nothing more romantic though than heading out to a road inhabited by scary people that will sit there and stare at you with giant heads and hunchbacks. Am I right or what? There's an interesting story that our friends at Haunted American Tours share on their websites, and it goes as follows. One student and his girlfriend, thinking the little wooded road was a good place to get cozy for a night out, pulled into Grunch Road out of the sight of the main highway. They turned off their headlights. With only the glow of the radio providing light, the two teens went quickly to work on their own particular night moves. It wasn't long, however, before their passion was interrupted by terror. It began placidly enough, just a feeling of unease with the encompassing darkness and the incessant chirping of the crickets and night creatures. Soon, it was the oppressive silence and the bad 70s rock song. Then, it was a shriek and the teens sat bolt upright in the back of their car. From outside, all they could hear was the rustling of brush and the swaying of bushes in the pitch blackness all around them. Soon they were alarmed by the sounds of grunting and snuffling. A guttural call, like one animal calling to another, was all that took to propel the teens over the front seat. They started the car, and it seemed just in time, as out of the woods a white arm lurched for the passenger side of the door. Screaming into reverse, the car lunged out of the woods. And when they finally reached the safety of the teenaged girl's home, she was in shock. All she could say was red. Over and over. Red. The color of albino eyes. I am so turned on right now, aren't you? Ugh. The thing about all this, though, is that it is honestly, it seemed like a big bunch of nonsense. But then, some folks allegedly started to disappear. How or why? Apparently when you're driving down Grunch Road, people would see a goat on the side of the road. Since most folks are good, they'd stop and try and save it and deliver it from its goaty demise, but the darn thing would always wander away. They'd follow it a bit to make sure that it was safe, and then they'd get back in the car and drive off. Unfortunately, sometimes it didn't go that way. This was the case when a man that lived near Lake Pontchartrain went missing in the summer months. His wife reported him missing, and when searching the area around Grunch Road, they discovered the man's truck, fishing trailer still attached to it, and the driver's door wide open. This was the case that got the local authorities' attention, and they said at this point some locals told them about one of these camps. They went to check it out and see what they could see, and lo and behold, they saw trailers dotted throughout a clearing in the woods. However, according to the quote-unquote official records, they found nothing. Like creepy stories generally yield, the unofficial account was allegedly retold by the officers that as they shined their lights through the trailers and around the woods, they saw the reflection of red eyes staring back at them, just like what this teenage girl supposedly saw. You have to take this with a grain of salt, but I've heard far weirder things that turned out to be true. It is said, though, that others have seen goats around the edge of Old Grunch Road, but who really knows? Either way, if you see a goat, you should probably stay in your car. While this part of the Grunch Road story is strange, it's not the whole story. The first bit is believed by some to tie into what the quote-unquote actual Grunch story is. What is the Grunch, you ask? It's not a bunch of people that have been cast out from society. Rather, It's actually a creature that calls the swamps around New Orleans its home. Many believe that the Grunch is a type or maybe just a cousin of the Chupacabra. You know, the goat sucker. Here's what they look like in case you can't picture it. Alright, close your eyes. Not if you're driving. Imagine a creature standing somewhere between 3 and 3.5 feet tall, with leathery or scaly black-gray skin. Some reports have said that the Grunch is green, but part of me thinks people might be thinking of the Grinch. The Grunch is also said to have long horns or spikes running down the length of its spine, very similar to how a chupacabra looks. It's described as looking almost like a goat, but it has these very large red glowing eyes. They're also described as having an unmistakable smell. Not a sweet-loving cookie smell, but rather that of a grotesque, almost rotten stench to it. The way that the Grunch kills is also like that of its chupacabra cousin. It's said that creatures have been supposedly killed by the Grunch, that they were completely drained of blood and all of their organs were removed. He's very thorough. In most cases, all that was found was a single puncture hole, like that of the chupacabra. That's where the straw goes. But the Grunch branches out a little bit from its goat-loving cousin. It's said that the Grunch is incredibly intelligent. It's known to be able to open doors, use tools, and make a pretty mean gumbo. The Grunch is also known to have a wolf-like howl that has been described as being like a banshee scream. And occasionally, people hear it talking to its friends using some sort of low growl. Perhaps he's just in a screamo band, eh? If you don't know what screamo is, please Google it. Don't make me feel that old. Even though I'm not. Okay. The real interesting part comes about with what is the Grunch? Where did he come from? Well, we have two schools of thought when it comes to the origin story. Both are kind of intertwined. It's believed that the Grunch first originated with a very real person, the voodoo priestess Mary Laveau. It's believed that at one point there was something born. This thing is continually referred to as the Devil Baby. After the Devil Baby was born, it was taken to Laveau to be dealt with. You know what that means. Her means of doing so were to castrate the baby so that it could not reproduce and create more evil spawn. The Ghibli bits that she had removed from the Devil Baby had fallen to the ground and it turned into a male and a female Grunch. They turned their attention to the voodoo priestess and she fell to the ground, fainting at the thought of what she had just created. When she awoke, the Devil Baby and the two Grunches, whatever you want to call them, they were gone. At this point, this is where the story may or may not tie into the band of freaks living in the woods. Some people believe that this group of people made a deal with the devil. They were sick of being treated horribly by society, so they decided to ask Satan himself for a hand. Thanks to Laveau, this creature was born. The inhabitants of the swamp need to make a sacrifice to the creature in order to appease them in hopes that they don't turn against the people themselves. It's kind of like paying HOA dues, but instead of sending a check, you tie out a goat and wait for a person to wander through just trying to help. Bam! Sacrifice lunch. There's also a bit of speculation as that it's just a regionalized chupacabra. Kind of like how Sasquatches seem to adapt to the areas that they call home. Perhaps the chupacabra has just adapted to the swamps around New Orleans. Sometimes, with these kind of creatures, sightings are just kind of eh. You don't see too many, but you get a lot of the whole my girlfriend's uncle's dog walker, sister's ex-husband's, milk delivery guy's neighbor kind of things. But, in the case of the Grunch, that's not the case at all. There have been quite a few sightings throughout the last century, and even as recently as a couple of years ago. After Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, it seems that the reports of this creature spiked quite a bit. And not just in the swamps, but in settings that weren't in the swamps around New Orleans, within city limits. The New Orleans Metropolitan Golf Course reported at least a half dozen sightings on their property. On the Mysterious Universe website, they posted one such story that was relayed to them. This witness was driving along a road within New Orleans itself, mind you, not out in the swamps. Here is what she saw.
This thing looked like some sort of lizard-like cross between monkey and bulldog. It was horrible. It was shuffling along with a lopsided gait and seemed to be so unnatural that I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. It had grayish, scaly skin and a snouted face that looked to be a cross between that of an ape and an alligator. It's really hard to describe. As I approached it, it stopped and puffed up to stand on two legs at a height of about 5 feet, looking at me with those baleful eyes. And then it emitted the most unpleasant hiss I could imagine, after which it sort of lunged at me as I passed. Let me tell you, I was well on my way after that, and I have never seen anything like it since.
There are other encounters that are similar to this. There are reports of folks driving along the area formerly known as Grunch Road, and they see some sort of dog-like creature running along next to their car or just sitting on the side of the road. Who knows what they're actually seeing? There are a few possible explanations. Firstly, we're gonna kick back to Old Reliable. It's a misidentified wolf or coyote or wild dog that has a serious case of mange. In the United States, there have been a few documented times when animals have been spotted, namely in the South, misidentified because it is actually nothing more than a mange-covered coyote or, even in one terrifying case, a raccoon. I mean, I guess there's no reason to think that that couldn't happen in Louisiana as well. It's not really outside of the realm of possibilities, but there's also another explanation to this one. It's more of a believable one for those that believe. That it's a chupacabra, and it just happens to live in Louisiana. Chupacabras are rampant around the South, so there's no reason to believe that it wouldn't also live in and around the swamps of New Orleans. Sasquatches and Bigfoot move around, so why couldn't this creature? I mean, who wouldn't want to live around New Orleans, right? The area has a lot of dense vegetation, there's no shortage of food, and there's a really great music scene. I mean, who wouldn't want to hang out there? The Grunchuses aren't the only creatures that call the wild bayou of Louisiana home either. There are a plethora of other cryptids, legends, and lore that call this wonderful state home, but there's a specific one that really catches this man Squatch's eye. A big reason is that we both really, really like Honey Nut Cheerios. You know, that's not really verifiable, but in my mind, I think it's spot on. I believe it. This next friend brings us into the Tammany Parish, which is a boat ride away from Old Big Easy. We're going to venture into the Honey Island Swamp in search of the Honey Island Swamp Monster. If you are looking for a vacation destination, you're not really into the big craziness of the big cities, I'd still probably steer clear of the Honey Island Swamp. Unless, of course, you're a cousin of our old friend Bigfoot and want to make sure that you can live carefree. Then, this is the place that you want to live. This is just a stone's throw across the water from New Orleans. The Honey Island Swamp is considered by many to be one of the most pristine swamplands in the U.S. It's not an area that's seen a whole lot happen to it and looks strikingly similar to the days when the French croissanted their way onto the North American mainland a fortnight ago. It covers about 70,000 acres, and just a bit more than half of that swamp has been designated as protected wildlife area for a plethora of animal species. Some of those fine feathered friends are owls, bald eagles, black bears, raccoons, and our good friends the alligator. Okay, well, I mean, they're not all feathered, but an alligator with wings would be neat, or it would just be a dinosaur, which, I mean, I guess it kind of is. You know what, either way, it's scary. The Honey Island Swamp is an area known to a lot of locals as being a haven for fishermen. I called one tour company under the guise of said fishermen and was told that they had a ton of fish in the waterways around the Honey Island Swamp. bluegill, largemouth bass, crawfish, everything you could want. When I asked about the Honey Island swamp monster, the man on the other end said, and I quote, "He ain't never seen it, and if I did, I'd shoot it." God bless America. As I said before, I love me some Sasquatch. As I read more and more of these stories of creatures around the US that are the hairy variety, as I said before, I'm starting to think that calling something a Sasquatch is kind of like calling you or me a human being. We're all the same. We have eyes and ears and elbows and epidermises. But we're all different as we have different dialects and skin colors and languages. We all fall under one umbrella, but each support is just a little bit different. I believe that the Sasquatch is no different. We've talked about Bat Squatch, the Skunk Ape, and an abundant amount of creatures that are similar, but each unique. The Honey Island Swamp Monster is absolutely no different. Like most other Sasquatches, this fella stands somewhere between 7 and 8 feet tall. Generally, it tips the scales at an estimated 400 pounds. Of course, some folks believe that the creature weighs a bit more, but it depends on what time of day it steps onto the smart scale, I suppose. Next, let's move on to this creature's absolutely luscious hair. We're talking about beautiful shades of brown or gray, matted to absolute perfection, usually filled with dead fish parts. Yum. What other way could this beast get to the absolutely awful stench that usually accompanies it, according to those that have been around it? It sounds quite a bit like Skunk Ape or Momo, but it probably has to do with where these creatures like to call home. If you sleep in a garbage can, you're gonna smell like garbage. No offense, Oscar. Another very noteworthy characteristic of the Honey Island Swamp Monster is its eyes. They're a very distinct yellow color, and some believe that they even kinda glow. However, this might be because a lot of the descriptions of the eyes generally say that it's similar to that of a reptile. If you've ever seen a light shine on a swamp in the evening, alligator eyes light up and scare the absolute bejeebus out of you. It's terrible. There is one very distinct difference that our friend the Honey Island Swamp Monster has that separates them from the rest of the Sasquatch pack. Most Sasquatch have that very specific, well-known footprint. The one that we all know and love of an oversized, bipedal primate-like creature that you know right when you see a picture or a plaster cast of it. Well, the Honey Island Swamp Monster does not have that signature footprint. Rather, this creature has a three-toed footprint that appears to be webbed. That's something of note and makes this fella stand out. You know what's interesting, though? He's not alone in that. Our friend Momo is also described to share a similar footprint to that of the Honey Island Swamp Monster. Also, another creature called the Fook Monster in Arkansas has also been described very similarly in their feedy areas. They all also share the same similar features right down to the long shaggy hair and yellow eyes. Creepy, eh? Cousins. Another interesting thing that these creatures share is the general timeline of when they first had their coming out party and revealed themselves to their adoring fans. Momo, the Folk Monster, and the Honey Island Swamp Monster all started to appear fairly regularly around the 60s and the 70s. That's the 1960s and 1970s. What a time to be alive, huh? And be hairy and smelly and dwell in the forests. The Honey Island Swamp Monster was first thrust into the spotlight in 1963 when a retired air traffic controller named Harlan Ford was out stomping around the Pearl River when he and his compatriot happened upon something that shook these two men. As they were in the swamp, they noticed something a small bit away from them. Ford described his first encounter with the creature saying, "It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Ugly and sinister and looking like something out of a horror movie." He and friend Billy Mills said the creature was there but a moment before it spotted them and proceeded to leave. The two men returned to the area in 1974 and found something that chilled them to the bone. They found a few hogs that had been killed in the swamp. It didn't seem like just any ordinary predator killing these, though. They hadn't been eaten and they weren't picked clean, but they were sliced up and their throats were ripped out. They realized the two boars were too far away from the water to have been eaten by an alligator, and even then, alligators generally don't just leave random bits of boar lying around the swamp. They're pretty picky with their eating habits. Around one of the boats, they also noticed a three-toed webbed footprint. The guys retreated from the swamp pretty quickly at this point, as they didn't really want to have another run-in with the creature, but they returned a bit later to get some plaster casts of the footprints. Harlan Ford kept quite a few of these in his belongings, and after he passed away, they even found some old Super 8 footage of what appears to be the Honey Island swamp monster stomping around the swamp. When I saw the footage, however, I wasn't so sold. I will go ahead and post it on the website, and then you can decide for yourself what you think it is. There was another man that also claimed to have seen the Honey Island swamp monster on many occasions. His name was Ted Williams, but he did not play for the Boston Red Sox. However, this Mr. Williams was an avid outdoorsman that grew to have a relationship with the Honey Island swamp monster, or, as he claimed, numerous swamp monsters. Ted Williams was a trapper and a fisherman that worked in the swamps around the Pearl River. He had quite a few encounters with the numerous Honey Island swamp monsters and never believed that they would have harmed him. He even said that he had numerous chances to shoot the creatures, but he didn't. As a matter of fact, here's an account from Mr. Williams himself.
"First time I ever saw it, it was standing plumb still like a stump. I stopped and realized it wasn't a stump, and it wasn't supposed to be there. When I stopped and ran, it was dark gray, about 7 foot high. It jumped a bayou. That was the first time I saw it. The next time I seen him was swimming the river. Two of them. One was bigger than the other and faster than the other, and they swam just like a human with them long overhead strokes. I tried to get one of them to look at me, but the other one ran off and the other one just wouldn't look at me. I could have shot it, but I wouldn't on account it wouldn't look at me. It looked too much like a human to me. Broad shoulders, arms hanging down below its knees. Hands looked almost like a human's."
Ted just wanted to coexist with these creatures, which might seem ironic to some. It seemed pretty strange to the folks that Ted knew as well. Some believe that the Honey Island swamp monsters actually ended old Ted's life. One day, Ted went into the swamp to set some line. He never came back from the bayou that day, and many believe that he was the victim of the Honey Island swamp monster. There's no real evidence to support that, but who really knows? These creatures were never known to be hostile to anyone. Some do theorize that the dead boars out there were the creature's way of saying back off the people that were around. But again, I am not a Honey Island swamp monster, so I don't know. There are a few different explanations about this one. One of the main reasons this creature even caught my eye was that one of my favorite shows, America Unearthed, did a show about this fellow. And yeah, I know, I'm a dork, yada yada, whatever, I don't hide that badge. Either way, their host had an idea of his own that actually makes some sense. If you've ever been around a swamp, you know that in the water, under the top layer of muck, methane can build up as a result of dead and decaying plants. If you were to disturb that top layer, it's fart central. The smell is awful. The host theorized that there are creatures that walk through the swamp and even crawl through the swamp that stir this stuff up. It allows the methane to escape and creates that nasty smell. Partner that with legendary tales and other normal creatures trudging through the swamp, and you've got the makings of a legendary Honey Island swamp monster. That also ties into the whole misidentified creature part too. After spending some time in swamps, I get it though. It would totally explain the smell, but only that part of it. It doesn't really explain the eyes or the body or anything like that. When Harlan Ford died, there was a Super 8 movie found that I had mentioned. In it, you can clearly see a creature walking through the swamp that looks ape-like. But when watching it again, it really looks like a traditional ape costume. So that, might explain away what the Honey Island Swamp Monster really is, right? Or maybe it's a legit cryptid that calls the swamps of Louisiana home. In the same episode of America Unearthed, not only did he try to explain away the beast as swamp gas, but he also provided a potential explanation on what this creature and many other Sasquatchy creatures might be. There used to be a legitimate creature that there is scientific proof about called the Gigantopithecus. Some folks believe that this creature may be the explanation to a lot of these bipeds. That could make total sense. And if you're not familiar with this guy, it's a giant primate believed to have existed as recently as 12,000 years ago. I know that's a long time, and 12,000 years a lot can happen, but it has a lot of similarities to Bigfoot and the Yeti and all these other creatures. Not too hard to believe that these creatures couldn't still exist alongside of a lot of adaptations and evolution. I for one have no idea, but it's not all that crazy. It could be legit or it could be absolute bumpkiss. Either way, if you are ever in New Orleans, head out to the Pearl River and check out the Honey Island Swamp. It's reportedly one of the most gorgeous places around, and who knows, maybe you'll even make a new friend. Well, speaking of friends, it appears to be that time. But have no fear, it's the first of many we're back at it with as we're ramping up the South and the Midwest, and there is absolutely no shortage of cryptids, legends, and lore that we're about to drop on you guyses. To those that have stuck by me, including my straight-up strange family, thank you so much. Speaking of that straight-up strange crew, make sure that you check them out. Head on over to straightupstrange.com or follow them on Twitter at strangepodcasts, and you can see everything that they have to offer. From stories to cryptids to true crime, there's a little something for everyone. Make sure that you give them a follow and see what all is out there. And while you're on the following train, make sure that you check us out on Twitter at MNFpod or follow us on Instagram at monstersandfriends. I like to share some bonuses from our states, and if there's something else out there that's interesting, I try to post that as well. Plus, I'll post the video of Harlan Ford's monster monkey creature thing on there too. Make sure that you don't ever miss a new episode either by subscribing to the Monsters and Friends podcast wherever you download your podcasts. Whether that's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Uncle Todd's Podcast Party, whomever. Subscribe, share, rate, and review, and we will love you forever. Thank you all so much for listening and supporting to this marathon of a podcast, and we will chat again real soon.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.